You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey! Welcome to HR Bandit. This is your host, Ankita. It's been a while, but I'm so excited to be here today. If you're new here, a big welcome. And if you're returning, you know you're my favorite folks. Today, we're doing things a little different. There are no top stories. We'll do that another time. Instead, we are diving deep on one of my pet peeves, the use of psychometrics. Those who know me well know that I'm a longtime skeptic of psychometric tests, and it'll take quite a shift for me to start seeing their value. Now, don't get me wrong, I enjoy taking these tests, and I have taken almost most of them that exist. And the results always feel tailor-made for me. I enjoy taking them, yet Barnum effect. Now, for the uninitiated, also called the Forer effect, it's a phenomenon that occurs when individuals believe that personality descriptions apply specifically to them, more so than other people, despite the fact that the description is actually filled with information that applies to everyone. And it is for this very reason that I'm very pleased today to be joined by Maya and Melvin, two people who make a living via psychometric tests. Melvin Payne is the commercial director with Advanced Strategies in UK, with extensive experience with people leadership and business management, gained from a successful career with FTSE 100 and private companies. Melvin delivers the Hogan Assessment Certification Workshop to international occupational psychologist consultancies, executive coaches, human resources, and learning and development professionals. He also provides international assessment services and executive level coaching. He's a member of the Association of Business Psychologists and the British Psychological University, TUA, and TUOP qualified, which, Melvin, you'll have to tell me what these acronyms stand for.
I will do. I'll do that later. No worries.
But our second guest, Maya, and I'm so scared of getting this wrong, but Shragnoska.
Yes.
Good. Is the regional director, UK MEA International Distributors for Hogan Assessments. In her role, Maya supports Hogan distributors throughout the Middle East, Africa, United Kingdom, Turkey, and Greece. Specializing in strategic HR and business development, Maya also has experience in the oil sector, business consulting, and organizational development. During her career, Maya has held the roles of coach, facilitator, assessor, and workshop master. She holds a master's degree in business administration from the Warsaw Business School, as well as master degrees in political science and biology. Okay, that was me talking for a fair bit. Maya, Melvin, I am so glad to have you here today. I'm going to jump straight in with my first question, along with, of course, all the, we're so glad to be here. When was the first time you took a psychometric test, and which one was it?
Should I go first? I can. Okay, so welcome and thank you for having us and welcome everyone. And of course, I'm glad to be here. The first time for me was a Hogan test, and I took it for about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I think I was experienced with a Belbin kind of team roles earlier, but it wasn't a real inventory. So for me, the very first one was Hogan.
Yeah.
And you're still with them.
Here you go. I'm pretty loyal, huh?
Pretty much.
Melvin? Yeah, I still remember my first one because probably a little bit like you, Ankita, I disagreed with it totally when I first had it. It was actually 41 years ago as part of an assessment center process when I was sort of a young aspiring manager. So when I used to have hair as well, which has all dropped out now, with all the psychometrics I've done since.
Which one was it?
So the first one was Myers-Briggs, and it was also combined with one called FIRO-B. It was also combined with a numerical and a verbal and an abstract reasoning test. So I spent quite a few hours in the first time effectively completing reports and tests on myself.
Assessment centers, we've got to love those.
Yeah. They still exist.
Oh, yes. And I'm sure whoever comes up with them in their current organization is a star. for coming up with something brand new. MBTI was my first one. And I think we took it in business school as like an introduction to psychometrics. And I was like, oh my God, this is genius. And then I went into like the whole metrics of how relevant it is. And I was like, they fooled me. Like for the first time ever, I've been completely scammed. Well, not for the first time, but yeah, I felt very scammed at the end of it. Yeah, but like I have taken MBTI at least 3 more times over the many years. And like it has to be the most popular. Like it's just
it's popular pretty much.
I've seen people who are like, hi, I am IN whatever. And I'm like, don't like that. But yeah, ENTJ, it's always been the same. But I know today's episode is dedicated to figuring out psychometrics, what are they, where should they be used? So I'm going to start with like just the basics, because the two of you work in that field. Could you help our listeners and me understand what are psychometric tests, and more importantly, why do so many of them exist?
That's a very good question. I don't know. We don't want so many of them to be existing, you know, it's making our work more difficult, but still they keep on popping up everywhere in every country. So I think they exist because people are still trying to pursue the question, who are we and what is the nature of human nature? And they give many answers to that. And so most of the psychometrical tests were developed to answer that question. And you can look at that question from different perspectives. So, for example, the Myers-Briggs inventory is trying to show the whole of you. So what is your identity, reputation, and how do you display your behavior everywhere? Whereas Hogan looks at the personality from more reputational point of view, and we try to measure and try to predict performance, and we try to measure how other people see you. But there are very different approaches. And why people do it, why there are so many tests? Well, different purposes. Some of them are very clinical, and we don't go into that so much, but they help people to get better, to get healthier, to get a therapy. Some of the tests or inventories are very much business oriented, and this is where Hogan is placed. So we try to predict occupational performance, basically. We try to help people make more informed decisions about who they hire, who they fire, who will they promote, and how they can cope with matching people with the organizational strategy and culture. Some other tests can help you to find a romantic partner or, you know, promote yourself over LinkedIn. So there are very many purposes. And I think my answer is that, you know, all of us, we are a little bit narcissistic. So we like to find out about ourselves and we like to listen how great we are. So maybe that's another reason why people come up with tests to feel our narcissism. Melvin, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so too. And all of those different purposes we use tests for. And I think the other side of that as well as what we call the personality side, you've also got psychometric tests that cover our abilities to do things. So, you know, how well can I perform tasks or solve problems compared to my peers? So
would you say then psychometric tests are science-based evaluations to reveal bits of personalities?
Ideally, they should be science-based. Not all of them are, I'm sorry to say. They should be science-based and to tell you something about your personality from your behavioral, from the behavioral state point or cognitive ones, because you have plenty of tests that measure cognitive ability or your intellectual capacity. And that's also very useful. But we think at Hogan that it's less useful than predicting how you're going to behave in the workplace day to day, on where you're stressed and what drives your behaviors. So we think personality is in long run responsible for your success or your failure, maybe more than your intellectual capacity, especially for certain job levels.
And there's one comment you made about, you know, us being narcissists that actually reminded me of an incident. I was, we'd got an external trainer in for one of the sessions and to design them. And she was like, oh, let me give you a top tip for designing any training session, throw in a psychometric test, and then look at the evaluation. And people love it. They always feel like they've discovered something about themselves, even if it's total trash. So if you see like scores plummeting and your feedback for that training is like 3 out of 5 on a regular basis, throw in a psychometric and you'll see a shoot. And I was just like, really? And she was like, yeah, just do it. And I was like, this is it. The scam continues. But like, yeah. I know I'm being fastidious and calling it a scam, but it is, it has a reputation of on both ends.
Yes. So, definitely does. Yes, yeah. It does. And the same for the horoscope. So many people are reading the horoscopes and let me write you one today if you want to. I'm pretty imaginative, so I can do it. And it has no validation whatsoever because people are like that. We like to discover ourselves. But that's why, you know, developing a test which will really give you basis for decision making takes time. And there is over 30 years of research behind what Hogan does. And we hire, you know, a good number of psychologists to help us. And the founder of Hogan Assessments is a psychologist himself, Dr. Robert Hogan, who has spent many years on trying to discover the human nature and have run plenty of researches on that. So yes, we do take time for researching and putting science behind what we preach. But we are not free of error. I mean, in the end, this is statistics, and psychometrical tests are based on statistical probability. So there is always a room for error. And I think that's why many people get skeptical about them, because they think, oh, I'm going to take some psychometrical test and it's going to tell me true and only true, like in the court. And then, you know, you discover not everything is true there and there is an error, and they forget this is just statistics in the end.
So let's pick on that, right? Like what makes or what differentiates a good psychometric test from a bad one? There's so many that exist, right? So if you were to look at, say, the statistical probability of it being accurate, what do you think is a good probability? And do psychometric tests actually tell you upfront? Like, does Hogan say, the probability of our tests is 60%. Like, I've never seen that written anywhere.
No. Yeah, perhaps if I can pick up on that. But the way I look at it with a psychometric test is a little bit like us predicting the weather. So over time, we get more and more accurate at predicting the weather. But I might say, you know, we're expecting it to rain tomorrow afternoon. Sometimes we'll get that wrong. It might not rain till tomorrow evening. And as humans, we're really, really complex. We're not only affected by, you know, who we are, our upbringing, we've got the context, the environment that we're in. And so when we look at psychometrics, I'm quite a skeptic like you, Ankita, even though I use them. What I usually say is don't believe anything that a representative of a test publisher says about the quality. Look for independent reviews by people who have no sort of vested interest in using that tool. And that you talked about the BPS and those registers that I'm on as a test user. The two that we'd recommend for all of your listeners, if you ever want to check how good a psychometric tool is, either take a look at the British Psychological Society website, and there's a list of reviews there that you can access. They're all independent. Or more internationally, there's an organization called Buros, BUROS.com. And I usually say to people, if you go there and have a look at the review, it will tell you two things. One, how accurate it's likely to be, Ankita, picking up on your question. But also, what sort of context should it be used for? You know, what is it suitable for and when is it not suitable? So just because it's accurate, that doesn't mean you should necessarily use it for a certain purpose.
And I think I'm still confused. So I could go onto the website, and of course, this band is all show notes and links will be in the show notes below. So we'll add that in. But if I go on to any of the two websites that you mentioned and I look at the highest reviewed and the purpose it is that data enough? Or what else should I be looking at?
I think it's a good start, but probably you have to know what are you looking for, really? What is your goal? Because there is something triggering you and there is a reason why you're looking for that, unless you're very narcissistic and you just want to do all of them. But I believe that most of people have other reasons to do so. So that goal should drive your decision and your choice, of the test. But I would say, yeah, the independent agencies or psychological societies, they can give you a pretty fair description about the inventory and also tell you how much you can trust it. Why is that? First of all, you know, measuring somebody's personality is an intimate endeavor in a way, because people tend to be fragile about who they are and how they are perceived. So you rather make sure once you are filling out the test that the test gives you some probability. The highest the probability is of its accuracy, the better it is for you. But also that the test doesn't take into consideration your race, your religion, your sex, your age, any of those things, so that it's free from those biases, and also it gives an equal measure to everybody. So it brings fairness in the assessment. And this is something that's very important for many psychologists. This is a key thing for Hagen people, so that our assessments are fair for everybody.
So let me pick on that a little bit. And because you work with Hagen, so we're going to try use Hagen as an example, but how do you assess that it is fair of all of these attributes?
Well, first of all, you fill it out online, so nobody's seeing you as during an interview or an assessment center. So in that sense, this is free from the subjective biases that we all have or might have. And also, to some extent, it will be free from political struggles at the company, right? So the office politics, that they're always there in the decision-making process, for example, in the selection. But the other thing is the methodology that we use and the items that are within the test. So we are not asking about those things. We are not curious about, you know, your gender and your race and your beliefs or your sexual orientation. We try to measure completely different things. So our items would not state those questions, basically. Whereas you have a number of tests that they do ask for it. And at the same time, they are more biased and less inclusive.
And there are different types of assessments around that, Ankita. So some will force you to make a choice around certain things. So if I think about Myers-Briggs, I'm either going to say I'm more extroverted or I'm more introverted, but that's my view of myself. The difference, for example, if we take something like a Hagen questionnaire, Hagen have a very unique way of measuring personality. And what Hagen have collected for now, as Maya says, over 30 years, is not just what people say about themselves, but actually, if I describe myself a certain way, how are other people likely to interpret my natural behaviors and tendencies? So often when we're talking to people in the workplace and they want to be successful at what they do, we're interested in, can we raise their self-awareness about what other people are likely to see about them? And so when Maya talked about probability, Hagen have built up one of the largest databases in the world that indicates how people are likely to be experienced based on how they answer questions.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
There's always an element of people wanting to game psychometric tests, right?
You bet.
If I know what it's trying to figure, I'm going to try and respond a certain way. And to come back, obviously, this is one of the most well-known things people do. So psychometric tests try and negate it by asking similar questions or like a whole bunch of questions that check against this tendency. And I'm very interested about like the science that is involved in creating these tests, right? Like, how is it created? Like, what goes on? Just like a tiny glimpse behind the curtains. And then how do we continue to check for relevance, given like things are changing? And then obviously there's one argument that people are like we stay constant and the environment around us changes. So we'll always have certain tendencies. And then if I was to tag on more questions along with it, the last one is there are a lot of tech tools coming out, and I have seen a few organizations now say that they're using large language models and other technologies to check the validity better than they ever could before. So yes. Given all your experience, could you talk about like how are these created? How do we check for relevance over time? And then how do we use new age tools to check for the validity?
Okay, perhaps if I pick up first just on sort of the construction of a psychometric, we could probably do a 3-year degree on how you would do that. But very simply, people identify what they want to measure, come up with a set of questions that is they think will measure those attributes or elements. And then what they will do is gather evidence and benchmark that to make sure it measures what they think it will measure. And I know that sounds really simple, but that's what it's about. So if I want to know whether someone's an extrovert or introvert, I might just say, here's 5 questions. You know, I like being around people a lot, yes or no. I like talking a lot, yes or no. I don't like being on my own, yes or no. And they'll give me a pretty good idea of whether that person's likely to be leaning one way or the other. But it also picks up then, Ankita, on the point that you made, which is, but what if I want to lie? Maybe I don't want to reveal information about myself. Or maybe it's being used for a job application. And I think they want somebody who's a bit more of a talker. So I'll tell them that I'm good at it. And so world-class psychometrics have what we call impression management scales, or we call it faking good. Am I trying to make myself look too good in there in the way I complete the questionnaire? And for example, Hogan, we see that as a skill. So if I'm very good at just sort of reading situations very quickly and able to create a positive impression about myself, you know, you can think about environments where that might be useful, like customer service or sales. But if I'm the sort of person that spends too much time worrying about what people think about me and I present differently to people in different environments, then that becomes a problem. So what we're interested in is, can we identify those sort of people? But secondly, can we then use that to say, is that going to be helpful or is it going to hinder them? And if they're really good at faking and presenting themselves in a favorable way, maybe that might be useful sometimes. But we just rather know.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Melvin, and thank you for making it. I would just add that, you know, there is, in general, there is nothing like a good or bad personality. So first of all, you shouldn't think of failing that test, which measures a personality, because it's not a cognitive assessment, right? You can fail a cognitive test, but once you're filling out a personality assessment, well, this is what comes out. And yes, people are having some fears, especially if those assessments are used in selection process. So they try to make it up. But at the same time, it is probably what they're going to do on a daily basis. So it gives you a probable estimate of how they're going to approach job tasks. And when you said, how do we secure that we really measure what we want to measure, where there is a big research done on it and we come up with norms in every country, for example, that Hogan is present, we have local norms versus global norms, global pool. We also try to look at our items when we translate them to other languages. Are those items correct for a certain culture or environment that we're going to use it? For example, as you have mentioned, I have a pleasure to cover a number of countries, and we have different set of questions for the British people and slightly different for the Middle East, just because the culture has other restrictions and other beliefs, and we want to respect that. So in this sense, you also make sure that you can measure certain behaviors because you take into consideration how those people live, how they behave. So this is all based on science, and also that's why we involve with local distributors to have better insights into certain countries and cultures and workplaces. Most of the companies, they would also, the psychometrical providers, they should have pretty solid sample groups for initial research, right? So they shouldn't publish a test without a solid sample and just testing the test itself. So this is what Hogan does over
time. What would be a good sample size?
The bigger it is, the better, but 5,000 individuals is already a pretty solid one.
Okay. So if I was to today write a test, I should test it with at least 5,000 before I publish it.
Well, it would be beautiful.
statistically, you could do it with 100 people.
Yeah.
But the difficulty is making sure it's representative of all the people that you're going to be using it. So just to share a recent example, we've been working with a client who uses a psychometric test to support recruitment of salespeople. And what we were able to show them that the test that they were using was based on a sample size that was quite large, but it wasn't based on salespeople. And so effectively, they were using a test that was not really telling them what they wanted to know, even though it was what we would call a valid test. If we take something like Hogan, the comparison groups have to be representative of the population. So, for example, if we take the UK and Ireland that we represent here, the UK norm group has to cover everything from a management population, sales, customer service, professionals. So if it's used in a working environment, it covers all sorts of people that you're likely to encounter in that environment, not just a certain part of the population. And I think you also made a good point, Ankita, about, you know, how do people keep these things up to date? And again, it's a very important question any of your listeners should ask, is how often does the test publisher update not only their questions to make sure that they're relevant, as Maya said, but also the population that they're being compared against. So again, you know, if we take Hogan, for example, the global norms have been updated twice in the last 4 years. And so, you know, if I'm somebody in business who's really concerned about, you know, who I'm being compared to, it's good to know that I'm being compared to the people I'm working around now and not a bunch of students that a professor was testing back in 1981, for example.
I'm going to for a moment ask you to take your Hogan hats off.
Sure. Like
it's going to be hard, but I'm going to ask you to take that off. Does it ever scare you that psychometric tests may be being misused in circumstances around the world?
Yes.
Like, what's your biggest fear?
Two things, because I'm skeptical about the use of psychometrics anyway. You know, I don't come from an HR or psychology background myself. You know, I was a business leader, and there was often occasions when I felt I was being tested, and actually the results either weren't accurate or they weren't checked. So one of the things that worries me is about fairness and are they used appropriately? And because I'm our commercial director at APS, I think one of the things that often worries me is, are people wasting their money and, you know, scarce HR budgets by using things the wrong way or paying for things that don't really add any value? But even saying that, for example, Ankita, it might make people feel good if there's a psychometric test in their training program. And I guess that might have a value itself. But if I'm using a psychometric to support a hiring process, it really worries me that people are using that to predict whether somebody can do the job and just taking it for what it says without actually exploring the results and checking them and validating them with people.
Yeah, and or having a knowledge to interpret. Because what worries me sometimes, you know, all those tests or situations that people who have not been given a certification training or they don't have a proper background to interpret the scores and the results, they try to do it. And that's very risky because they can be harmful to someone. Also, you know, hiring decisions can be supported by tests, but shouldn't be replaced by them. So there is a number of other things you should consider before you hire someone. And usually you can't discriminate someone based on the results of assessment or personality tests. Yes, take this into consideration, but do not discriminate. So this is what worries me. And as an HR person, I've been working in the internal HR, as you mentioned, in the energy sector. I've seen that happening. So people would use assessments to kind of, you know, give a reason not to hire someone. And this is not something what you should do. So that gives me kind of a, you know, nightmares, but it worries me. It worries me also that people, you know, nowadays we are all overloaded with data, with information, and the rhythm of our lives is very fast. It's really quick. And we tend to look for answers in Wikipedia or internet instead of books. So people try to save time, but sorry to say, they might become superficial or stupid. Let me say that.
Yeah.
They will not have informed decisions. And that worries me because there are so many very quick solutions online, like those quick tests that you can do and send a link to your candidates and they fill it out. And you make a business decision based on that. And you can harm an individual, but also your organization at the same point. So that worries me that we are living in a world which changes all the time. We have artificial intelligence coming and giving you answers to everything. And people tend to forget that there should be some science behind it.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the part that scares me the most is very similar to what you said in the space of hiring, because one of the things we are trying to do is bring diverse perspectives in. Mm. Melvin, to your point, right? Like historically, salespeople may all be of one kind and they may be successful. But I'm going to use a very feminist thing, right? Like, if all successful salespeople were men and attributes that are typically related with men, women will continue to be left out in that space, right? And I'm using gender, but it's also diverse perspectives, introverts, extroverts, like whichever thing. Mm. And what really scares me is that when you're using psychometrics to say this kind of personality is most successful and we're only going to get those kinds of people in, you're actually building a very non-diverse perspective-related group.
Not necessarily. I think it's the opposite, because a proper psychometrical assessment wouldn't take that into consideration. And as Melvin said, you know, it's rarely that you have an assessment designed to do one thing only. It happens, but usually it is designed to give you a perspective of a personality from some particular angle. And it's not good or bad result. The result becomes good or bad when you have a job description or an industry or a company culture. And then you try to think, okay, so what kind of behaviors do I want to have? And a good salesperson in HR might be a very bad salesperson in car industry or in IT, I don't know, whatever, yes, in a restaurant. So I think it's the contrary to what you are saying. Psychometrical tests will help you to have more diversity, be it gender-wise or nationalities or extrovert, introvert, as long as some job descriptive criterias are met. So I think it's more helpful. I think there is a lot more bias coming if you don't have an objective measure such as good psychometrics and you only have, you know, somebody who thinks that they are very experienced and they have such a great intuition. You know, I hear it so many times from managers. Oh, Maya, I worked there for like 20 years and my intuition is the best because I've seen it all. And then I know, welcome to biases. So I think this is a lot more dangerous, honestly. Melvin, yes, what do you think?
Yeah, I think particularly picking up on things like bias and gender diversity, the thing that always makes me smile is that actually as males and females, for example, we have more in common in our personality characteristics than are different. And that's the same culturally, although we might come from different backgrounds and different upbringings, we all have more in common than humans than different. So usually in a work environment, what we're interested in is, what does somebody need to be good at to be a high performer in this job? And as an example for development, I then use a psychometric to say, how likely is it that I'm going to be able to demonstrate those skills naturally? Or is it something that I'm going to have to work hard at compared to someone else? And that doesn't matter then when I'm male or female, tall or small. The diversity then comes from, do we have different people who perhaps might need to learn a skill more than others, are bringing different perspectives? And again, there's a lot of research that suggests, for example, that where teams are all very similar to each other and have a lot of similar thought processes and values, they tend to gel quicker and get on quicker. But actually, in the longer term, there's a lot of research that suggests teams with diverse thought and diverse personalities can often outperform in the longer term. So again, usually when we're talking about personality assessments, we're not just thinking about that piece, Ankita, about, you know, me as an individual and what I want to hear, but what's the real context and how do you use this data collectively to say, you know, do our diverse skills help us become more effective in a team together? Or actually, because we're different, do you not like the areas that I'm different because I look different or sound different to you? And so for us, it's more about, do we appreciate the differences and help people manage them rather than sort of diversity get in the way? Hope I've explained that okay.
Yeah, that's very heartening. Because like the more I hear of it, the more I'm getting the sense that it isn't the psychometric tests in themselves that we should be skeptical of, but where they are used and who is interpreting them and in what context. Right. Because like many other tools that exist in the world, the tool in itself is harmless.
Yes.
But what you do with the tool could be good or bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Very correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get us out of here very quickly. But before you go, I want your comments. I'm gonna read out a small section. I want your thoughts on it. And then we'll start wrapping up. But this is where originally Bertram Forer in 1948 did this experiment, from where the name of the effect comes from. It's obviously a professor and a student. It was not to be taken as seriously at the time when it was first done in 1948, but it has been replicated many, many times. So it's one of my favorite studies to go. So the professor gave a psychology test to 39 students, disregarded their response, and handed out said individualized sketch and asked each one of them to rate it on how well it applied. Each student was handed an identical sketch, and the students rated its accuracy 4.26 on a scale of 0, very poor, to 5, excellent. Now, the study has been repeated multiple times, generating similar responses. And in fact, in 1977, Ray Hyman published a paper that gave you 13 tips on how to convince a stranger that you know all about them, which was based on a very similar concept of psychometric tests. So I will put the link in the description before, so you know exactly how to be most popular in parties or be a successful crystal ball reader. But how does this make you feel?
I think that's a great example of making sure your listeners do their homework and make sure they're using a tool that is scientifically validated and independently reviewed, as it does what it says. I also think that tells you how sort of easy it is as humans. And if I'm a hiring manager, for example, how easy it is for me to intuitively think I've got a great candidate, and how easy we are to convince as humans that something's right when it might not be. So all I would say is use good data to help. And that's in any, you're not just psychometrics, it's in any environment in HR. Use evidence to help support, but don't just let the evidence be the decision maker, whatever it is you're doing.
I love that, Maya.
Yeah. We can stay with that. That's very, very correct. I would just say that I'm not surprised by that example that you have given. And I think it probably applies nowadays still because of a number of reasons. There will be always people who try to cheat or mislead others and use that. And there always will be people who in groups tend to agree with the others, even if they think something is false, but they won't have courage to say so. So again, I mean, those things happen. And at the same time, I would say be brave to disagree. And I'm very happy about your skepticism, because be brave to disagree, be brave to show your skepticism, because in the end, if scientists wouldn't be skeptical, we would be in the caves. So I think we really get to where we are because people were skeptical and they were seeking to have answers to such questions. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much for sitting down and having a chat with me. I think I have personally learned a few things, especially that there is a place online that can help me make the decisions, but also, you know, just checking on some of the biases I had on, you know, that, oh, like psychometric tests could be unobjective and, you know, have a lot of biases creeping in. So I'm going to let us go at this point of time. But before I do, very, very quickly, Melvin and Maya, when was the last time you took a psychometric test?
Last year.
That's a long time back.
The last one was in lockdown.
Oh, wow. Okay. So all three of us need to get together and do a psychometric test really soon. My last one was just this year, and it was Hogan. It was my first time.
Here you go. Good for
you. Loved it. Yeah. Okay. On that note, thank you so much on behalf of NHRDN, Melvin, and Maya. This is Ankita. We are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.